Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I'm your host, Paul Gannon. For the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. And you can also follow me on Twitter. Send me messages on Twitter at GoForItGant. We got a big show lined up for you on this Labor Day weekend, and I guess it's the unofficial last weekend of the summertime. Expected to be joined by former NFL running back Jamal Anderson. We're going to get Jamal Anderson's take on some of the headlines in this upcoming season. Also expected to be joined by former NFL defensive back Mike Bass. And if you remember Mike Bass, he was the guy who returned the fumble in the 1972 Super Bowl. Garo Yepremian throwing the ball, if you want to call that a pass, threw the ball in the air. And Mike Bass called it, and Mike Bass returned it for a touchdown. So we're going to talk to Mike Bass. And also actor and former NFL player Brian White will stop on by, and we'll get Brian's thoughts. Talk about Brian's NFL career, and also what's going on with Brian now in terms of his acting and all. And Brian, well, he's a big time star. You remember him from Stomp the Yard? He did some work there. And Brian is a big time actor. We can't wait, and looking forward to talking to Brian White. So make sure you stick around. Got a nice, great show for you here today. I want to start right now with Michael Vick. And if you haven't heard the news, you've been living in a cave somewhere. But Michael Vick has just signed an extension, 6 years, $100 million to stay with the Philadelphia Eagles. And this is the second time this man has signed a $100 million contract. If you remember, back in 2005, 6 years ago, Michael Vick signed a 10-year, $130 million contract with the Atlanta Falcons. A lot of money. A lot of money. And if you remember also, Mike Vick, in that deal with the Falcons, he got a $37 million signing bonus. Here with the Philadelphia Eagles, he will get $40 million in guaranteed money. He had $37 million, not a signing bonus, but in guaranteed money. But if you look at it now, Michael Vick again, this is a guy last season kind of came out of nowhere. Not kind of, he came out of nowhere. I mean, career high in passing yards, touchdown passes, he did it all. Rushing touchdowns, all were career highs. 21 touchdown passes, over 3,000 yards passing, 9 rushing touchdowns. He did it all. And he happened to run for another 676 yards. He did it all. He did it all last year for the Philadelphia Eagles. And if it wasn't for Michael Vick being with the Philadelphia Eagles, they probably would not have made the playoffs. He was 8-3 as a starter last season. 8-3 as a starter. The guy has come full circle now. I mean, who could remember? I mean, he spent 18 months in prison for that dogfighting beef. A dogfighting situation. He spent 18 months in prison. And somehow, some way, he turned it all around now. He has come full circle. He was on the bottom. Now he's on the top. He came into Philadelphia 2 seasons ago as the number 3 quarterback. No one expected Michael Vick to be in this position here today, at least not with the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, if you figure maybe Michael Vick could turn things around, but if he was going to turn things around, it wouldn't be with the Eagles. Because you remember last season, the Philadelphia Eagles were going to go with Kevin Cobb. Kevin Cobb was their guy. He was their guy. He was their quarterback of the future. They traded away Donovan McNabb, and they traded McNabb away with the sole purpose of handing the job to Kevin Cobb. They handed the job to Kevin Cobb. Kevin Cobb got hurt the first game against the Green Bay Packers, and the rest is history. Michael Vick took it from there. He got the opportunity, and he took it from there. He took it from there. And as of right now, you know, he still owes a lot of money to a lot of people, still owes $19 million to creditors. Hopefully he can get that all paid off, and he can move on from his life from that and get everything right for Michael Vick. But here's the question, and here's my take on this whole situation. I'm not sure if I would have gave him this extension for many reasons. Number one, he's done it for 11 games. Is it really – was it a situation where he snuck up on people? Or was it a situation that he's really as good as he's played? Or has he really as good as he's played during this last season? But if you look at the end of the season, focus on the end of the season now. The Minnesota Viking game, not a good game for Michael Vick. Stunk the joint up there. The Giants game, we look at the Giants game. Yes, they came back. Yes, they won that game. But Michael Vick did not have a good football game. And then look at the playoff game against the Green Bay Packers. Didn't have an awful game against the Packers, but didn't have a great game against the Green Bay Packers. Now, should that be something that we look at as saying that possibly Michael Vick, those first few games were just kind of sneaking up on people? Or should we look at it as, you know, maybe Michael Vick just ran into a little rough spot, ran into a little slump near the end of the season? I don't know, but I'll say this. I thought the Philadelphia Eagles should have kept him franchise for the $16 million for this season. I thought they should have did that. I thought they should have kept Kevin Cobb for the sole purpose of just in case Michael Vick is not Michael Vick, and just in case also that he goes down. And also, just in case those last three games were real, just in case those last three games showed us that Michael Vick really may not be the quarterback that we think he is. I'm not sure if I would have gave him this deal. I'm not sure if I would have gave Michael Vick this deal. I'm not sure if I would have gave him $40 million in guarantees. I think I would have waited. I really do. And the last time we could go in history, the last time Michael Vick was given this type of deal, granted he was a lot younger then, but he was with the Atlanta Falcons, and we all know what happened with that situation. Fair or unfair, it is what it is. But I'll say this. Do I think Michael Vick is a changed man? Yes. Do I think Michael Vick will have a very good season with the Philadelphia Eagles? Yes. Do I think Michael Vick has turned this thing completely and totally around? And I will have to say 100% yes. That's what I believe, that he has turned this around. I do. But is there a possibility that Michael Vick may not play as well this season? Yes, there's a possibility, a very good possibility, I think. That possibility does exist. It exists. It definitely exists. But again, I'll say it before, I'll say it again. I think Michael Vick will have a great season. But I'm not sure if I would have took the chance that the Eagles are taking and essentially handed him the keys to your franchise. This is his franchise, everybody. He is the franchise guy. He is the franchise quarterback. Who knew that this was going to happen many years ago, a few years back? Who knew that this could be possible? No one. I mean, this has to be one of the greatest comeback stories ever. I mean, this is a guy who was in jail, broke, in a lot of debt, and to think that he can go spend 18 months in prison and come on out and not only become a better player, he has become a better player. The numbers speak for themselves. He has become a better football player at this point of his career. He is a better player than he was when he was with the Falcons. He is a better player. To think that could ever happen to me is amazing. I didn't expect to see this. And you looked at Michael Vick. When you saw him with the Philadelphia Eagles the first year, he was doing a lot of Wildcats offense. He was in the Wildcat, and essentially he was doing a lot of running. But you didn't see that burst. You didn't see that electricity that Michael Vick usually has and had with the Atlanta Falcons and had before he went to prison. You didn't see that. And I started to possibly question that maybe, just maybe he's lost it. Maybe that time in prison, he's lost it. He's lost whatever he has had. He's lost what he has, his ability, his speed. He lost that. He lost his quickness. Maybe he had lost it. But then he came back last season and gotten himself in a lot better shape and really played some good football for the Philadelphia Eagles. 21 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, and got them very, very far. And it was 25, 30 yards away from getting them past the Green Bay Packers and possibly getting them into the getting them to the Super Bowl. You look at it, though. You look at it. I think with Michael Vick, and I think if the Eagles could have gotten past the Packers, then maybe they could have gotten to the Super Bowl. Maybe. Maybe. But, again, that's all speculation at this point, and obviously it's all what if. But the Philadelphia Eagles now, with Michael Vick as their franchise quarterback and with a strengthened defense, with Nnamdi, with Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, with Colin Jenkins, with Jason Babin, with all these guys, hopefully to make that defense better, a defense that if you couldn't stop anybody. They couldn't stop anybody when they got into the red zone. They were the worst in red zone defense. So with the Philadelphia Eagles, if you got to the 20-yard line, guess what? You were scoring a touchdown because that defense could not stop anybody in the red zone. They couldn't do it. They couldn't do it. But now, adding a Colin Jenkins, adding a Jason Babin, adding a Nnamdi Asomugha, adding a Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, that should change things. That should change things. The only thing, those linebackers are a little questionable. Some questions there in the linebacker, with the linebackers, with Casey Matthews as the middle linebacker. A lot of questions there. A lot of questions there. A lot of questions there. But if you look at it, this team has only a short time with the shortened training camps, shortened off season. They only have a short time to put this all together. And it doesn't happen necessarily overnight all the time. So, is it a defense that possibly, or a team that possibly could struggle early on? Possibly. Possibly. Because you have to realize. You have to realize it takes time for these things to happen, for teams to gel. And just because you won the offseason battle in terms of free agency doesn't always translate on the football field. If that was the case, the Washington Redskins, who have always been the free agent champion, the Washington Redskins, they would be in the Super Bowl each and every year. Because they always have made that big splash in the offseason. They always made the big splash in the offseason. So if that truly was the case, if winning the free agency battle guaranteed championships, then the Washington Redskins would be the team to beat. They would be the team to beat, hands down, each and every year, because they always won the free agency battle. They always won the free agency war. They always won it. They always won it. And if you look at the Eagles, the offensive line is in a state of flux, and they're changing guys around, and Jason Kelce is the new starter at center. You got Harriman's now moving over to the right side, right tackle. So you got some things in flux here in terms of the offensive line. It takes time for that thing to gel. It takes time for that thing to come together right. That takes time, my friend. That takes time, my friends. It does. It does. Hopefully, the Philadelphia Eagles, and they're not, I mean, there's a lot of teams in the same boat in terms of trying to gel and put all this stuff together. So everybody is kind of in that same boat. But hopefully, if you're a Philadelphia Eagles fan, it comes together quickly. It comes together very fast. And you will, hopefully, if you're an Eagles fan, go very far and get to the Super Bowl. Vince Young called them the dream team. We'll see how dreamy they truly are. But Michael Vick right now, you would think it was a dream that we're saying here, sitting here right now, and I'm telling you that Michael Vick earlier this week signed a 6-year, $100 million extension. You would think I would be lying if I told you that 2-3 years ago. You would think I'd be lying. But Michael Vick has come full circle. He has come full circle now, and he was at the bottom, and now he has moved to the top. He is at the top right now, making all that money. 6 years, $100 million, 40, which is guaranteed. That's a lot of money, folks. And that tells me that you have officially handed the keys to your franchise to the one, the only, Mr. Michael Vick. How will it end? $100 million contract has to equal a Super Bowl. That's the only way I think a $100 million contract can truly, truly be validated. That's the only way a $100 million contract can truly be validated. Validation for a $100 million contract comes with winning a Super Bowl. Validation with a $100 million contract comes with a Super Bowl. And anything less, to steal a phrase from Charles Barkley in the old right guard commercials, would be uncivilized. Anything less would be uncivilized. And you have it now. I mean, you can smell it in the air. Football is here. College football, full slate of games today. Football is here. It is back. In full effect of NFL preseason, it's over, finally. It goes too long. You watch the fourth preseason game. Actually, you don't even watch it. I don't watch it. It's unwatchable. It's not enjoyable. It's not something that is watchable. It just is not watchable. It's not watchable. It's just not watchable. It's just not watchable. It's not watchable, man. It's not watchable. It's just not watchable. I don't know how anybody can watch the fourth preseason game. Half of those guys on that field may never play an NFL game. They may never play an NFL football game. And that's just the bottom line of it all. That's the bottom line of it all. Those guys may never play an NFL football game. They may never play an NFL football game. That's the bottom line of it all. So you look at that, the fourth preseason game is just darn near unwatchable. It ain't watchable, folks. It's just not watchable. It's not. It's not watchable at all. It's not watchable. You're listening to Go For It on BlogTalkRadio.com.
Okay. Hey, what up? It's Corey Almeida, a.k.a. Corey Live, host of Pizzerica on the Hub and warm-up host for American Idol and Dancing with the Stars. And right now, you are listening to Go For It on Blog Talk Radio with my man, Paulie G and Jeremy. Get it!
Thank you, sir.
You got it, brother. Have a go, man.
And we're going to be joined very shortly now by former NFL running back Jamal Anderson. And Jamal, we're going to get his take on this upcoming NFL season, an exciting NFL season. Like I said, the football is in the air. Football is in the air, and it's going to be great to watch NFL football again. Let's bring in now former Atlanta Falcons running back the great Jamal Anderson. Jamal, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you? How are you?
I'm doing well, doing very well. And your Utah State team is doing some big things right now.
What? You mean I went to Utah. We in a Pac-12
Utah.
Now.
I forgot.
You know what?
Utah. I'm sorry, Jamal. I'm sorry.
No, I'll say this to you. I'll say this to you because it's happened to a couple of friends of mine who not from the West Coast necessarily, but because this is a compliment in it. Utah is known for being giant killers, man. And so most of the country, I got people calling me going, "Oh man, you watch Utah?" I said, "Yeah, but that state." And they're like, "Oh, because you're not used to hearing Utah State going up against Auburn." Now, Utah, a couple years ago in the Sugar Bowl, we dealt with Alabama, you know what I'm saying? So we know we're the only team in the history of the BCS to finish undefeated twice. So it makes sense. So I take it as a compliment, good sir. They're a rival of ours, but we root for them, too, because they're, you know, 35 minutes away from campus. But they're playing lights out right now.
Fair enough. And Jamal, the NFL season, it's less than a week away, and with this lockout shortened offseason, man, I'm having a hard time getting a handle on what may go on in 2011. Well, are you having a hard time figuring out what may go on in this season?
Well, the thing for me that was I guess initially going to be one of the more concerning things coming into the season was how prepared guys were going to be. You know, how prepared were the guys going to be? Were they going to be in shape? You know what I'm saying? We're going to be in shape and ready to go. Who trained? I mean, you know, it takes a tremendous amount of discipline to train for an entire offseason on your own, you know? So there weren't team organizations and things of that nature. Not just that, what's going to happen with rosters, because you don't have the same time to, say, pluck through the college ranks and some of the pro ranks. Like, there are still some outstanding veterans who did not get signed or who are not on rosters for various reasons. You know, in T.O.'s case, he had the knee injury, but, you know, you look at T.O. wanted to play, you know, the fullback from the Saints, the big Mike Carney, you know, different people who are getting signed late, and you go, what's happening with some of the rosters, and then who's going to be ready? And then, of course, you know, you have Peyton Manning's next, so it's going to be interesting. It's really going to be interesting. There are some teams who clearly look better than others, like the Pittsburgh Steelers. Their defense has looked outstanding this offseason. I'm not really worried about the Packers. People are like, oh, they didn't have organized workouts, blah, blah, blah. Aaron Rodgers and Clay Matthews, they were probably training in the closet. It don't matter. Them boys, they're going to be ready to play. That's the type of team you don't have to worry about. But I just think it's going to be interesting what happens the first month of the season to see who breaks out and who's really the most prepared and the type of leadership. Because, you know, look at Tennessee. What's going to happen there? What's going to happen with Philadelphia and the Eagles? Mike's got the money, but what's that team going to be like? When are they going to start gelling and playing together, you know?
Exactly. And you talked about the Philadelphia Eagles. Vince Young called them the dream team. They added a lot of guys in this offseason. How do you view the Philadelphia Eagles right now?
I mean, they're always a threat. I mean, listen, you know, I was here to welcome number 7 with open arms when he got to Atlanta initially. So the guy had an outstanding season for, you know, 13-14 games last year. The ending wasn't what he wanted, but the last couple games were kind of tough. But with his talent, you know, and his understanding, another year in that offense and those coaches and the continuity of those guys, he's definitely going to be the engine for the Eagles. Because if Mike is on, he's pretty, pretty hard to stop, especially with the weapons that they have offensively. The thing about the Eagles is, you know, you're good in the secondary, but what about the linebackers and the safeties? You're good on the defensive line. I like to pick up with Jenkins and some of the other guys. I think Trent Cole is an underrated guy who's been every bit the terror Dwight Freeney and Robert Mathis have been in Indianapolis. You know, they're the similar size guy. He's just a tenacious guy. So there are definitely things about the Eagles I like, but there are going to be tremendous expectations. Man, they spent a ton of money, man. And you know the fans of Philly not having that without a championship, you know?
Definitely. It's championship robust in Philadelphia with all the money they spent in this offseason.
Yeah.
And speaking of all the money they spent, Michael Vick, 6 years, $100 million. Like you said, you welcomed him into Atlanta. First off, if you were the Eagles, would you have done it? And second, have you seen a better comeback story?
You'd have to go back right off the top of my head, I can't really think of another comeback story. I mean, because, you know, Mike was vilified. I mean, and still, there are still people who are, you know, who've been less than forgiving, even though he has made amends, gone to federal penitentiary, was put in an awful financial situation and then came back and was a backup. And I mean, I said it last year, we were talking about it on CNN. You know, listen, I'm not here to, you know, wave a Michael Vick flag. Mike's doing a fantastic job on his own. He's done everything that people have asked him to do, and he's led, and he's had a good offseason. And, you know, you got to look at it and say, okay, the years on this guy, you take into consideration. Now here's the benefit for Mike being gone a couple years. You look at that six-year contract and go, well, he doesn't have the wear and tear on his body that the years suggest on paper, you know, because if it was 2 years, he was kicking it. He wasn't getting hit or anything. So you look at what he brings to the table. You got rid of Kevin Cobb. You bring Vince Young in, who I have liked the way he looks. But you got to lock up your franchise. Who's going to lead your franchise for 4 or 5 years? Whether or not he sees 5 or 6, we'll see. But who's going to lead your franchise? And so I think it was a good, you know, it was a good deal for the Eagles. I think the Philadelphia Eagles, again, if he comes in and does what he did last year, and in fact improves, which he's done every year there, man, we're going to be talking about this might have been a discount. We certainly hope that doesn't happen here in Atlanta, obviously, because we have expectations for the Falcons.
But they still love him in Atlanta.
You know what? There's a part. It's very split now. It's very split. I'm not even gonna mince words. It's quite racially split. There are still a lot of Caucasian people who like Mike Vick and love what he did. But it's really been a polarizing situation here, and I think it stems from how people view what everything that Mike went through. You know, it's a difference in how people are raised and what they think and their expectations for what he did and all that stuff. But not just that, you know, Mike's admitted it himself. You know, people were frustrated with his play. I'll start there, and then you add all those other elements into it. It was a different thing, but he'll tell you too. He didn't work the way he should have worked. I mean, everybody in Atlanta saw that talent and that explosiveness and all the ability. I mean, we saw all of these things. Remember, he rushed for 173 in a game out here in 02, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, this guy was in the Pro Bowl then, but if he would have been, he's matured so much, it's not even funny. If we would have had the guy who has the head that he has now, obviously younger, forget about it. So, yeah, the reality is, of course, he's still going to have fans here. He did great things here in Atlanta. Whether he was consistent or not, he was fun as hell to watch. He won a lot of football games. And so, you know, there are always going to be people who like him. But when he comes to town, it's going to be really interesting because he's cemented now in Philadelphia, you know?
Right. We're talking to Jamal Anderson, former NFL running back. And Jamal, you toted the rock 410 times back in 1998. So you know the pounding that a running back takes. Chris Johnson just ended his holdout, signed a new deal, $30 million in guarantees. Would you have done the same thing if you were Chris Johnson?
I did do the same thing. I mean, really, that's why, you know, I'm on Twitter and Facebook, and I mean, you look at what Chris – let's just take it here. Not even a comparison to me so much as the holdout. Look at what he has done. Now, this – I never even looked at this, but now that I'm thinking about it, there are some similarities here with respect to the numbers. I mean, my first – breakout year 96 was 1,100, but I mean, we're talking about Chris had 2,000 yards. He's averaging 1,500 yards per season since he got in the league. I mean, the guy's been outstanding. He's explosive. He runs between the tackles. I mean, yeah, every now and then he may say something or whatever, but for the most part, he's harmless. He's a good teammate. Dude produces, bottom line.
Definitely.
So, you know, and you see guys getting paid, and he's such a huge part of what the Tennessee Titans do. Sometimes in some organizations, in some parts of the country, you just got to work a little harder or kick down the door a little bit more. But he was certainly deserving of a new contract, and everybody agreed with that. It's the time and figuring out what was going to work best financially for both parties. But I'm glad it got done. And you know, I kind of figured it would get done. They got a new quarterback in Tennessee. They just drafted Jake Locker, who's I think is going to be a project, although he's looked better than I thought in the preseason. But they drafted a first-round pick. I mean, you got Matt there. Matt's an older guy. You got to have that explosiveness, man. You don't think you want 4-2-8 lined up game one, you know?
I mean, definitely. I mean, he is probably the best player on that football team, so you knew something would get done.
I was surprised it has lasted as long as it did, particularly with the new CBA being done. Yeah, and sometimes, you know, and there's no telling. Listen, I'm not defending Chris's representation. Who knows what Chris and his representation originally requested from the Tennessee Titans. It could have been crazy, and they just, you know. So, yes, I did know something was going to get done. And he's one of those guys, I heard people say, well, you know, because I did, after I held out and got my contract, I did end up getting hurt in the second game on Monday Night Football. I'm not worried about that. Mine was a fluke injury. It wasn't like a hamstring. I tore out my knee trying to break tackles. You know what I'm saying? So I certainly hope that that does not happen to Chris Johnson, but I'm not worried about whether or not he's going to be in shape and be ready to go. And some people say, well, you know, he might, man. Come on, man. We don't predict injuries. Let's let the dude go out and run. He's had a remarkable career. There's nothing that he's done that tells me he's all of a sudden going to slow down, you know?
Definitely. And I would agree with you. But after that 410, after you ran the ball 410 times in 1998, do you feel like you were ever the same? Was your body ever the same after that?
You know, I've always felt like I was uniquely built. I was uniquely built to be the type of runner that I was. I mean, I'm a little taller than 6 feet, like 6.5 feet. Definitely not 6'1", but I'm right in between there. And 235, 240, 245. I always was between 235 and 245. I'm just, the way I played and the way I ran, it didn't bother me. Like, here's the thing. I could have played a couple of more years. When I had offers to play football for several years after I decided to stop playing, and I chose not to because I was doing TV. Kids were getting older. I was comfortable where I was. A bevy of reasons. I didn't want to start over at another organization. I played for one team my entire career, but I most certainly could have played. I'll guarantee you, if I wanted to, I could have played 4 more years of football, okay? But my thing was, again, the type of runner I am, the type of player I am. You had 2 ACLs. Will it be more important, you know, when you're 40, 45, to be able to run with your kids out on the football field as opposed to, I gave them 4 more years, and, you know, and there are certain milestones and achievements that I certainly regret that I did not get to. But, I mean, everything happens for a reason, and I don't really look back too much. I know I could have played a couple more years, but I know this. My son's 6 years old. He's playing football. At practice, I can finish the sprints with the team. You know what I mean? I can run.
Right.
I'm not impressed. I see Earl Campbell and some of the guys, and I'm just saying, Earl Campbell was one of the best. I'm not comparing myself to him, most certainly not. He was one of my idols. I'm just saying the type of pounding that we take running the ball. I mean, you think about this, and I try to explain to people, when you're a running back, you know, quarterbacks, yes, they're susceptible to getting hit by all 11 defenders, sure. But for the most part, the corners and the safeties got jobs to do. The running back, say we get the ball in a shotgun situation, in a draw, everybody, all 11 are coming after us. Wide receivers, they go off the line of scrimmage. They don't have to worry about the defensive line. We are the only position on the field where all 11 guys are trying to take your head off. You know what I'm saying? So and if you run a certain way, like I only know how to play one way. Can't let one man tackle me. I don't want to go out of bounds. I'm a knucklehead. You know what I'm saying? I'm from New Jersey, man. I'm a knucklehead. So I want to run a certain way, and I want to be a force, and that takes wear and tear, you know?
Definitely. And Jamal, your former team, the Atlanta Falcons, last year, the best record in the NFC. They lost in the divisional round to the Green Bay Packers. They've added Julio Jones in the draft.
Yes.
It's Super Bowl or bust in Atlanta, but have they done enough?
Well, you know, here's the thing. You draft Julio in the first round, which was big, traded up for him, gave up some big picks for Julio Jones. I think it was a good move. I really don't question Dimitrioff and Mike Smith too much because they've put together the 3 best year run in the history of the franchise. And so when some people go, oh, but, you know, I'm like, they've done a pretty good job since they've gotten here, and the team has progressively gotten better. Obviously, Matt Ryan is a Hall I'm jumping the gun. Matt Ryan is a Pro Bowler. Michael Turner is a Pro Bowler. Tony Gonzalez is coming back. Roddy White is a perennial Pro Bowler, okay, one of the top five receivers in football. So you add a guy, you know, let's just say on paper, you don't even watch football, but you know there's a wide receiver who's 6'3", 222, who runs a 4.3, jump out of the roof, strong as all get out, and you say, hey, how about if I give you another one just like that? That's exactly what they did.
Right.
Roddy and Julio are mirrors of each other. And not just that, you go on the defensive side, Dante Robinson was a big-time acquisition last year in free agency. He was banged up. He famously got hurt in that play where he got fined for hitting Deshaun, but he didn't have the best year. Brent Grimes, you know, a guy from nowhere, was the Pro Bowl quarterback, and then Sean Witherspoon was the first-round pick as linebacker last year. He was banged up and didn't have the best year. He's healthy. And, oh, by the way, just signed another twin to John Abraham in Ray Edwards, who was really taking off in Minnesota before he blew out his knee, and then they couldn't, you know, they parted ways. And so the Falcons picked
right.
him up late in free agency, somebody who the team was rumored to be looking at for several months. And that's the conversation. The last piece is who? The last piece is who? And then all of a sudden, you got Thomas Dekou and those guys back there. You get Saunders from the Patriots. Patriots cut a starter. Falcons pick him up. Somebody Dimitrioff has drafted. So the pieces are in place. There's no excuses. Team was 13-3 last year. You know, there's the Super Bowl or bust is the bottom line. You know, this was
right.
a team, again, at 13-3, they had home field advantage. The season ended in the most embarrassing fashion. You think that's
yeah.
not on the mind of these guys out here? To me, it is. To me, they seem quite determined. And to me, they appear to understand that these are the expectations, especially with the direction and the moves that the team has made. So, you know,
definitely.
They're talking about Philadelphia being a dream team, fine. You know, Atlanta's never going to be a major market town, although Peter King might have messed up our game by picking the Falcons in the SI to
right.
win it all and be in the Super Bowl. But I mean, other than that, that little splash, you know, people talk about Minnesota. Oh, Romo's back in the Cowboys. What's the Giants going to do? Oh, the Jets. So, you know, let the Falcons muddle where they are. But the pieces are in place. The pieces are in place. These guys don't win 11 games. I'm going to be surprised. If we're talking about 10-6, it's not really a great season. Again, the playoffs, you can make a run in the playoffs. And all you got to do is win in the playoffs, a la what
right.
Green Bay did. But the expectations are high, and I think that they should do really well this year.
And Jamal, another team that we all seem to forget about, the Green Bay Packers, they're Super Bowl champion
yep.
Green Bay Packers, and they are returning Jermichael Finley and Ryan Grant. So,
yep.
I mean, have we forgot about this Packer team?
No, that's what I was saying. I don't think people have forgotten about them. You know, I heard people saying, you know, Green Bay was one of the only teams that didn't have organized workouts with the play. Blah blah blah. Again, Aaron Rodgers. Excuse me, I don't have a cough button here. Aaron Rodgers hit his stride last year. Remember before last year's playoff, he started catching fire. And before last year, what people used to say about Aaron Rodgers was, he can't win in the playoffs. He can't win in the playoffs. He hasn't won, right? What happened now? The same thing with Peyton. Oh, Peyton's not winning the playoffs. Aaron Rodgers was only like two seasons. Peyton's was 3, 4, 5, whatever. Oh, he can't win the playoffs. Once you win it all, they stop talking about that. Yeah, they didn't have their organized workouts. But Clay Matthews has proven on the defensive side to be nothing but a monster each and every year. So you know he's going to be ready. The one thing that was great for the Packers is the depth. Obviously, Charles Woodson has all of a sudden, I mean, I know he's playing nickel and going to be in and out, but that leadership and the depth that the Packers have and what a tremendous job the organization has done from the wide receivers on down. I mean, these guys lost key players in the Super Bowl and still beat a very good Pittsburgh team, you know?
Right.
So they just have that mentality. So there's no question the Packers are going to be a team to contend with. I wouldn't go so far as to say that they would be able to endure what they did last year, again this year, and then end up in the same situation. But who knows? you get to a point in an organization, if you go, you know, it doesn't matter who's in here, we're all, yeah, of course your top players are going to be the best players, but if you have guys who understand what you're trying to do, know their roles, and perform those roles to the maximum capability of their abilities inside of the team's game, you can win. The Patriots have proven it. Look at Tom Brady, for example. We just talk a football one-on-one with people right now. But you look at Tom Brady. Until Randy Moss, he didn't necessarily have a top-flight receiver.
No.
And I'm not disrespecting. I'm not disrespecting Troy Brown. Troy Brown was a heck of a player. But Troy Brown was his guy who also played both ways. You know, Stallworth was there for a minute, and, you know, he got other guys bouncing back and forth. But until then, but it's the production. It's guys on the same page who understand what they're trying to do within the team's scheme to the maximum of their ability. And you could win.
Definitely.
You know what I mean?
Definitely. And I want to switch to the AFC now, and I want to look at Peyton Manning. He has not played in this preseason. His status for week one is uncertain at this point. Two neck surgeries in the last 15 months. What can we expect out of Peyton Manning in this 2011 season?
The Colts, without, there's no question the Colts are getting a little long in the tooth, okay? There's no doubt about it. They have been, and I was talking to somebody the other day about this. You can't say dynasty because they only won one Super Bowl and went to two. But they've been the most consistently outstanding organization in the NFL for the past 10 years on the football game, on the football field. When you just talk about W's and L's, they just get it done, okay? These guys aren't getting any younger. You know, they run, they have a certain type of offense. We haven't seen in the past couple years outside of a wide receiver here, and obviously, but they still got weapons. You know, you got Reggie Wayne and different guys. They need some young, spectacular players to start popping up because they're getting a little bit older. But these are guys, again, who just a second ago, what I talked about, they all know what they're doing. I mean, Peyton Manning could call a play at 5 o'clock in the morning. Them guys could be in their boxers, and they know how to run it in sleep. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a system there. It's a system there,
right?
And it's bred a certain way. And to me, it seems as though, from the reports and everything I'm reading, that Peyton will be fine. He missed all the preseason last year. What did he end up doing? You know, he didn't start off like a gangbuster, but he ended up being the Peyton Manning we anticipated him being. You feel me? So nothing's telling me about his game that, you know, he's completely on the downside, but you have to realistically expect the decrease. The decrease is coming, okay? The decrease is coming. But to where it is, I still have to give Peyton Manning enough respect to go, you know, 18 healthy, just because he's so smart, he's such an exceptional field general, that 18 healthy or 18 on the field, pretty healthy, is still a very, very dangerous player, clearly, you know?
And I would agree with you, and I think with a guy like Peyton Manning, you have to almost see it to believe that.
Right.
That he's,
I mean, that's my thing.
You have to
I'm
going
to give you, I'm going to give you the, if you're a great player, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt, which means I'm going to have to see you get served on the field before
right.
I start saying, I'm not going to say, like, you know, I see and read analysts who want to be catchy. Oh, I think that it's over now. I just kind of just feel it. Man, whatever, man. Yeah, they lost in the playoffs, but I'm telling you, the last time we saw Peyton Manning consistently, he was still tearing people up. So until he goes out and he physically starts looking like somebody from the Washington Generals, I got to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Talking to Jamal Anderson, former NFL running back, and Jamal, the New England Patriots. This is a team that did a lot in the offseason as well. Ocho Cinco, Haynesworth, Sean Ellis. This was a 14-2 ball club last season. They lost to the Jets in the playoffs. But the AFC East is probably going to come down to the Jets and the Patriots.
Yes.
Have the Pats done enough in this offseason?
Well, you know, There's some part of me that believes, and I started really believing this the other day. I'm like, I wonder, has Ocho been like sandbagging just so he can be explosive? And but you know, I wouldn't put anything past Chad at this point because he can still run. The things I like about Chad, he can still run. He can run, and he really is a good route runner. I mean, he's a good route runner. Sometimes you get great players who like to freelance a lot. I mean, Chad can run a route. So I'm surprised he hasn't been as explosive in the preseason, but there's a part of me that thinks he's, like, stalling for the regular season. But we'll see. Haynesworth is an interesting thing to me because obviously everything he went through, he comes on a cheap. To me, Belichick is the type of guy who can get a guy like his motor going or it's over forever, obviously. But with Haynesworth, I felt like he'd be a little bit further along. The thing is, if he comes in and he starts playing, and he starts playing like the old Haynesworth, not only is he going to be a great acquisition, he is going to be an absolute terror. And Tom right. Brady's like Peyton Manning, and he had a better season than Peyton last year. I'm not worried about Tom at all. Wes Welker, we'll see, but we know he's going to come out there and step up and do what he's supposed to do. Gronkowski's a stud at the tight end. Let me tell you who you should look out for. Steven Ridley, the running back they took in the third round from LSU. You mark my words, he start getting playing time and he start getting out there and playing, he's going to surprise some people and he's going to step up and do some things. So I'm interested to see what's going to happen with him because nobody's thinking about a third-round running back from LSU that wasn't super famous, you know? But it's like him and the kid that they got from Arkansas, you know, the big quarterback, Ryan.
Mal.
So, I mean, you know, Bill Belichick knows what he's doing. The Patriots, again, like you said, 14-2. They're going to be a team. It's going to come down to them and the Jets. There's no doubt about it.
A quick Super Bowl prediction for us, Jamal?
I say it's going to be the Falcons and the Jets.
Okay. All right.
Falcons-Jets.
Mark
Falcons.
It down.
I'm taking the Falcons.
Mark it down, Falcons-Jets
in the Super Bowl, and I'm taking the Falcons.
Over the Eagles, over the Green Bay Packers. They're going to get out of the NFC.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Here's my thing about
it.
As much as I like Michael. Michael was my teammate. And people always say, oh, he's not here anymore. What happened in Atlanta? I never hate on my teammates, and I personally like Michael. I know what he's capable of. But I also know that Michael is not giving you 16 games. I never want to see a guy get hurt. I sure hope he never doesn't get hurt this season. But it's just not going to happen. His history's proven to us that he's going to give you 13, 14 maybe. So we'll see when that happens. And then you look at the depth again. Ray Edwards and these guys, they've made some moves here. And they just, they do things. They have a certain mentality, man. Like the Falcons are not going to be bothered if they're 11-5 and in the playoffs or 10-6. It's just like a blue-collar hard hat mentality for Mike Smith. For them, they're not so – they want to win games, sure. They're not as worried about the record as getting in the championship round, and then they try to handle business from there. Because at this point, they know what they need to do for the season, but getting to the playoffs isn't going to be the thing now, and especially what happened last year, okay? Now, this is a team who made it to the playoffs two of the last three seasons and, in fact, lost that game. So now it's like, okay, we know what we need to do for the regular season, but getting to the playoffs is going to be the key. So I just think they're going to be dangerous when it gets there because everybody's going to try to take it to a notch they've never been to. They got to, you know?
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Going to be a great 2011 season. And, Jamal, where can we find information about Jamal Anderson?
JamalAnderson.com. I got my blog that we're going to start up again. I'm actually first post in a couple months is going to be because I had to take a little hiatus writing all the time. The first post is going to be Monday, and then obviously my Facebook and Twitter links. Everything's on JamalAnderson.com. I really appreciate it, man.
Jamal, nothing but a pleasure talking to you, and this is the original Dirty Bird, everybody. Jamal Anderson, good luck, man, and let's do it again.
Definitely. Thank you.
Jamal Anderson, everybody. Great talking to Jamal Anderson. Has some very strong opinions. He has the Atlanta Falcons beating the New York Jets in the Super Bowl. We shall see about that one. We're going to be joined shortly now by the great Mike Bass, former corner for the Washington Redskins now. Let's bring him in right now.
Hey there, Paul.
Mike Bass,
Mike.
How are you, sir?
I'm okay.
How are you?
For an old man. I can't complain at all.
And that's a great thing. That's definitely a great thing. And, Mike, you played 8 seasons in the NFL. You were drafted by the Lions but only played 2 games with that ball club. Eventually, you would end up with Vince Lombardi in the Washington Redskins. Talk about that.
Well, actually, out of Michigan, I came out in 67, and I was drafted by the Packers with Coach Lombardi, and I made it to the last cut there in Green Bay. And one of the things that he said to me when I, after my release was, son, you can play in this league. Don't give up. And that's one of the things that kept me involved. And fortunately, I got picked up by the Lions. I spent 2 years there with the Lions. And when Coach Lombardi came out of retirement, went to Washington, he asked me to come to Washington. So I spent my last 8 years there in Washington. Unfortunately, he passed away after that first year in Washington. But he is one who had a profound effect on my life and my whole outlook towards not only being a man, but looking at football as what it was, and really helping me develop the ideas that I did about family, religion, dedication, all those things that go along with a part of being a part of the National Football League and football in general.
Right. And Mike, your best year, your team's best year to Washington Redskins was in 1972. You guys made it all the way to the Super Bowl. But going into that 72 season, did you realize that you guys may have something special there?
Well, after Coach Lombardi passed away, we had a dismal season, and then George Allen came to the Redskins, and he came with an entirely different attitude. And emphasis was placed on defense and special teams. And, of course, we already had the incomparable Sonny Jurgensen and then Billy Kilmer and Larry Brown, Charlie Haraway, Charlie Taylor. We had a great set of offensive weapons, but it was George Allen who developed the defense. And not only were we scoring, but we were able to stop people from scoring. And there was just kind of an air about that that year. We'd gotten a taste of winning the year before, and we came into training camp with the arrogance that only a group of veterans could have. You knew what you could do. And we were called the Over the Hill Gang because more so than great individuals, we were a great team. And that made a big, big difference. Big, big difference.
And, Mike, you talked about the defense in 72. You guys had Chris Hamburger, and Chris was just elected into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But talk about how good your defense was in 72.
Well, what made us great was that we didn't make mistakes. We weren't the best individual athletes, but we were a tremendous team, and we never made mistakes. And the difference between winning and losing in the National Football League is based really on the amount of mistakes that are made. But we knew not only what our jobs were, but we also knew what the job of the linebacker was or the defensive back next to me. We just studied the game, and we spent hours in the film room, and so we were really adequately prepared. And this was a tribute to the emphasis that George Allen put on defense. And there was nothing that we didn't know about another team that we were playing, and we just didn't make mistakes. And that and we played as a team, with everybody knowing that the guy next to him was going to do their job.
We're talking to former Redskins cornerback Mike Bassett. And, Mike, Chris Hamburger was recently inducted into the Hall of Fame. How happy were you to see that?
Oh, absolutely. It was a long time coming. It's too bad he had to wait over 20 years to get into the Hall of Fame. Here's a guy who had consecutive Pro Bowl appearances and selections. He was a pro's pro. He wasn't the biggest guy in the world, but smarter than hell. And, again, he called our defenses after that first year, and there was not a better football player in the entire league. And I was fortunate to play on the same side that he was on, and he helped, he saved me in a lot of games, and it was just that camaraderie that that kept us together. I knew I could count on him, and he knew that he could count on me, and that made a big difference. And I felt like I was going into the Hall of Fame when they selected Chris. I'll tell you, you couldn't find a better player and an even better man.
And we talked about it. You guys did go to the Super Bowl in the 72 season. You played the Dolphins in that Super Bowl. And, Mike, one of the biggest and memorable plays from that Super Bowl was your fumble return off of Garo Yupremian's, I guess you can call that a pass or whatever you want to call that. But kind of take us through that play.
Well, being, again, a part of a George Allen team, special teams played a very, very important part. And everybody had a job to do on special teams, and I was on that field goal block team. And the rush came from the opposite side, and I was really the guy who was to take a look and see what happens if there's a block. And fortunately, I think it was Teddy Backer who blocked the field goal attempt, and I was lucky enough to be in the right place at the right time. I call it luck, but it was all planned. Luck is when opportunity presents itself and you're prepared for it. It's ironic, Garo and I were with the Lions at the same time, and when I left, he left as well. He went to the Dolphins, and I went to the Redskins. And he and I still are friends, but I'm the forgotten guy on that play. He's the one making all the money off that play, and I'm a part of the trivia of trivia when it comes to that play. But we lost 14-7. It was a great game. It was a defensive game, and I relive that play over and over. But there are other plays that I relive that I think maybe if I'd done something else, who knows? Maybe we could have gotten another touchdown in one way, shape, or form. But so there are so many of these players who are playing today and who have played over the last 30, 35 years who have never been to the Super Bowl. So I have to look back and say, well, I'm thankful that we were there. But if you're a pro, second place doesn't mean anything to you. Right. And I always looked at my NFC ring as being the loser's ring. And it's only been recently that I said, oh, well, there are a lot of players who don't even get there. So I guess maybe I should be proud of this NFC ring. But as a pro, second place is like kissing your sister.
and that doesn't feel good at all.
Not at all. Not at all.
And Mike, you would retire in 75, and in 2002, you were named one of the 70th greatest Redskins of all time. How much of an honor was that for you?
Well, that, to me, that was a tremendous honor. I had never won anything, really, in professional football. I was selected on the first team, NFC team, a couple years, I guess 73 or 74 in that area. But this was really an honor to be placed among the great Redskins like Bobby Mitchell and Charlie Taylor, Sonny Jurgensen, Billy Kilmer, Pat Fisher, Ken Houston. I played with some great guys. I mean, hell, they made me look good, and I'm very appreciative of that. Greg Owens is a very, very close friend of mine. I talked to him quite a bit. And you couldn't find a stronger running back than Larry Brown and Charlie Harris. I just played with some great guys, great, and I was just happy to be a part of that team. I was a younger part of the Over the Hill gang, but I just am very, very proud of the fact that I could be mentioned in the same breath as some of those guys.
We're talking to Redskins cornerback, former Redskins cornerback, Mike Bastion. And Mike, just recently, we've understood the plight of the retired player in the NFL. I mean, guys are going through some real physical and financial woes, basically. But talk about that. I mean, how real is that?
Well, it's absolute. And for years, the NFL has put their head in the sand in claiming that that football, and particularly head trauma, had nothing to do with the degenerative issues. But that's been proven time and time again to be wrong. The only comparison that we can make is that Major League Baseball players, after 10 years in the league, they're getting $195,000 a year. And the public might say, well, these guys are, they're all making millions of dollars, but you have to understand that particularly a football player is not going to play football for 40 years. And it is the older guys who have made the game what it is today. It has become popular because we played when it didn't make any difference how much money you made. And we suffered for it. Of course, the equipment wasn't as good then. And if you got dinged, you got hit in the head. If you could answer a couple, three questions, what day was it, how many fingers were being held up, and so forth, you were declared fine and able to consent back into play. I think it is an absolute shame in the NFL. Right. And to an extent, the NFL Players Association should be ridiculed in high regard to just treat the retired players as they're being treated now. And in particularly, those players who played before 1993. Even some of the Hall of Famers on their pension are making less than $200 a month, and that's a shameful situation and a shameful legacy that is following the NFL Players Association and the NFL owners themselves. It's just an absolute shame, and I don't think you'll find any retired player who disagrees with me and who thinks that they've gotten their just due. And especially with the fact that Major League Baseball players are doing extremely well and they're being paid for their contributions to the game. My first salary was $12,000. That was my first salary. And I had a $2,000 advance, not even a bonus, a $2,000 advance. I may not have deserved more, but after what amounted to 10 years in the league, I'm certain that some of the things that I did and some of the things that some of the other players did, even those who played less than 5 years, made a contribution that is still paying the NFL today through all the films and the legends and the things that are used to promote the National Football League. So any of the people who are out there, the lay people, should really take a real look at what's going on. Why is there this fight between the retired players, the active players, and the NFL owners? You ask the right questions and you'll see what the truthful answers are.
And Mike, what's going on with you now? I know you got some new endeavors right now. Talk about them.
Well, when I retired, I moved to the Bahamas, and I was there for 18 years. I came back and took a position with the University of Florida as a counselor. But I've always been very much involved in real estate in one form or another. And my endeavors are not so much new as just going back over many of the same things that I had done before. I work as a consultant, and I put lenders together with projects, and that works out very, very well because both sides are being helped. I recently launched a website of mine, and this was at the prompting of my daughters and so forth, and it's at www.mikebass41.com. And we're still working on it. It's a lot of fun. I'm getting a lot of meeting a lot of new people. And there, besides reiterating some of the things that occurred in my life, not only as a football player, but my overall family situation, my mom and dad, my sisters, and so forth, there are opportunities to get autographed photographs and memorabilia and things of that sort. It's quite interesting and new, and I hope people will take the time to visit. Also, I'm working with the Legends of, which is a website that is, let's see, I think the URL is www.sotl.com/Mike Bass. And that puts people close to more of the active players or recently retired players in the league. And there's a lot of information on that site. But my bread and butter has to be the fact that acting as a consultant, I'm able to put the money together with projects and borrowers, and I get a great deal of satisfaction out of that.
Mike, we got a lot of satisfaction from talking to you, sir. It was a pleasure talking to you. We wish you nothing but the best of luck moving forward. And again, make sure you go to MikeBass41.com. Support Mike Bass and all he's doing. Mike, nothing but a pleasure, sir. Let's do it again.
Oh, thank you very much, Paul. I do appreciate your inviting me on the show.
Mike Bass, former cornerback for the Washington Redskins. And again, it was a pleasure talking to Mike Bass, and we wish him nothing but the best of luck moving forward. Again, a lot of these retired players are not really getting their just due from the NFL, and it's a sad, sad, sad situation, and hopefully that will get rectified in the near future. We're going to be joined now very shortly by actor and actually former football player Brian White, and we're going to get his take on what's going on with him and see what's going on with Brian White and some of his new things that he's got going on. We're going to be joined by Brian White very shortly now. Let's bring him in.
Hey, how are you?
Brian, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing well. How are you this morning?
I'm doing very well, sir. And first off, Brian, one thing I didn't know about you, but you are the son of Celtics great JoJo White, so athletics definitely runs in your blood. Is it safe
yeah,
to say
cousins,
that
also Chris Chambliss is dad's cousin, Devon White's a relative. My stepmother was a world-class sprinter. And athletics is the family trade, I guess.
Is it safe to say you bleed Celtics green?
Of course. I'm Boston through and through, definitely Team Boston. There's a little conglomerate of us on Twitter. But, yeah, Celtics, Red Sox, Patriots, of course, Blazers. If they're from Boston, I root for them.
And, Brian, I'm a Philadelphia 76ers fan, so, you know, I really don't have much love for the Boston Celtics.
We can agree, though, that the East Coast is where it's at, you know, and this year we got two strong teams in the NFL that are going to, you know, have a nice little war. So it should be an exciting season.
And, Brian, you can smell it now. Football is in the air. And you were a football player yourself. You were a defensive back. You played for the New England Patriots. How great is the fall, man? This is a great time of the year.
Best time of the year. I mean, there's nothing like it. I'm out here in California, and this is where I always get homesick. This is the time of year, around September, when we don't have a true fall. You know, it's still nice, 80 degrees out here. We don't have the leaves changing colors and you know, the chill in the air, that smell. And you know, it's football weather, and that's, you know, there's nothing like it.
Yeah, you can just smell it right now. It smells very, very good. And you grew up in the New England area, and how happy were you to get that opportunity to play for the New England Patriots?
I mean, it was a, you know, it was like a childhood fantasy come true. You know, the thing that I'm most proud of is that my parents made me do it the right way by going to Dartmouth College first. But you know, to play in the stadium was amazing. And you know, what was even cooler was to come back and shoot the game plan in Gillette, you know, years later with Mr. Kraft still there being a part of the production and all that. So getting to work in both fields was just a real blessing. I couldn't be more proud or have had more fun, you know, doing anything than actually playing in a real game and then coming back and making believe in a film. So it's been a wild ride.
And your career ended abruptly. I mean, talk about how your football career ended.
I tore my hamstring in half and basically was trying to rehab, went to the World League, played for the Scottish Claymores, re-injured myself. I was also playing lacrosse in the off season for the Blazers, Boston Blazers, the National Lacrosse League team. So rehabbing was not something I was particularly good at because I never got to rest.
Right.
And then I left the Patriots organization, tried to get back through the Eagles organization and, you know, even the CFL. Basically after 2 years, you know, going in and out, being a bit of a journeyman, ended up, I had gone through Wall Street. I had gotten my stockbroker's license, my Series 6, 7, 63, and 65. I used that Dartmouth education. I had also been modeling. I was doing a lot of different things while doing football or pursuing the dream of football. And
right.
Ended up getting an opportunity to come out to Los Angeles and potentially go to the Raiders camp and was discovered, I guess you could say, by a casting director. And because I had been doing those other things and had a bit of a resume, pictures and a small reel from commercials and stuff like that, I was able to land the first opportunity that I got, which was to be on a sitcom called Moesha. And so we decided not to go to camp that year. And to go to this show, and that was in 2000, and here we are, you know, 12 years later, 11 years later, and I never look back.
And you talked about playing lacrosse, and, you know, you play professional lacrosse, and talk about your time as a lacrosse player. Do you think that might have led to the end of your football career, being that you didn't have that time to rest in the off season?
Yeah, you know, I mean, look, the way I looked at it is I didn't always want to be a professional football player, a professional basketball player, a professional baseball or lacrosse. I wanted to be an athlete. Like, as a kid growing up, I played four sports. I started out as baseball, which was probably my best sport, and switched to lacrosse real late. And just by having the opportunity to do that, it kept me real focused, real, you know, always having that activity made me really organize and prioritize my life and my schedule. And I like that. So I wanted to keep adding as much to my life as I could because I would always have to use a system of checks and balances just to be able to do it. And that kept me focused, kept me at my best. So that's just how, you know, I developed as a young man. So when I was a professional, I liked that as well. It kept me out of trouble. It kept me out of the clubs. If I was playing and training, I wasn't partying. And you know, so that's just what I kept doing. As far as did doing both end, you know, both of those careers, maybe I could have played 4 years, 5 years. But, you know, I had a great 2 years, gave it my best. I don't have any, you know, regrets. And it led to the next thing that I was supposed to do. And I wouldn't prefer to be doing anything else today. So that's how I look at it.
We're talking to actor Brian White. And Brian, I look at it, man, you spent time on Wall Street. Talk about Wall Street. How was that experience?
I hated it, man. You know, it's a culture that's like, I don't gamble. You know, a lot of, I think 99% of the guys that are brokers or of any kind are gamblers, like to gamble, like to bet on the games on the weekend. I love to play in the games, but I never wanted to bet on the games. I've never gotten a charge out of that. I love playing, you know, a good game of poker, but, you know, for a charity event, but once it's my money, not so much. And so, you know, the idea of risking these large sums of money, even if you're doing it at the highest and most efficient and proficient levels, doesn't appeal to me. It made me, you know, more nervous than satisfied. So it was something I realized right away I needed to become more acquainted with, more familiar with, understand the power of, make some great connections, become truly financially literate, and then move on. And so immediately as I started to study for my series test, I started to try to transition to the next thing. And at that point in my life, it was perhaps football again, which is what brought me to Los Angeles.
Right, and was it tough? Was that a tough time for you, kind of making that transition? You talked about going from this place to that place just to try to play football, and then going to Wall Street. Was that a tough time for you in your life?
Yeah, man, it was real tough. I wrote a book this year. I co-wrote with Anna Cheshire Levitan out of Boston, my writing partner, and we created a foundation called Black Carpenter, and that talks a lot about that. In the earlier parts of the book, it's if people want information on that, it's at blackcarpenter.org. But yeah, I really at that point it was like a crossroads. You know, my parents had always told me education is everything. Made me kick my butt to go to Dartmouth. Said if I was good enough to play, the scouts would find me. You know, at Dartmouth, and they did. But I did both, and I felt like I had failed. I felt like, you know, my dad, this, you know, hugely celebrated all-star athlete, and, you know, I'm a good athlete, and I've had a good run, but not succeeded in that way. And, you know, my mom is a, you know, entrepreneur and a businesswoman. And so at that point in my life, I was like, Wall Street's not it for me, and that's, you know, that's supposed to be the best of the best. So I'm not, you know, I'm not mom, I'm not dad, you know, who am I? I haven't really done anything up to the levels that they've done it yet, so how do I make my own mark? And I guess that is kind of taking all the good from those experiences kind of propelled me to carve out my own niche, and I guess that was what I've been doing for the last 10 years, you know?
We're talking to actor Brian White, and Brian, you were talking about the transition. Did acting come kind of natural for you? Was it a natural transition for you?
Yeah, I guess I never ever desired to be an actor. I never looked at Will Smith or Denzel and said, I want to do that. I thought they were cool. They were role models and idols, you know, growing up and you know, Fresh Prince and then every film, you know, that Denzel's ever done. But the transition itself came simply with the tools and the skills I had built through life. I've been interested in dance since high school, and then college I studied ballet and jazz and modern, and then you know, I had gotten into modeling while I was playing football, and I had done some commercials, and I have a, you know, there's other associations that kind of prepared me. And by the time I got my first opportunity on Moesha, it felt the same to me as lining up against the wideout and the 100,000 people in the stands just bleed away. You know, you got to block out the voices and lock up with the eyes of the wide receiver and just say, it's me and you, let's dance. And that was what it felt like the first time I really was in a scene in L.A., and I was like, boom, okay, this is for me. I need to understand how to do this. So I became a student of the craft, just like I was a student of the game of football and lacrosse.
And Brian, you're doing your thing right now. I mean, you got a movie out called The Politics of Love. Tell us about this movie.
It's interesting. It's 20 years ago, there's a movie that Denzel made called Mississippi Masala. Denzel, a huge star on Earth, and an Indian actress, and it was about the topic was all race back then, and could these two get along, and how do these two cultures clash? In Politics of Love, the movie's inspired by an article that was posted in New Yorker magazine, true story, about a campaign affair that happened between a Republican campaign coordinator for McCain and a campaign coordinator for Obama in the 2008 election. I play the Republican campaign coordinator. So in this movie, Loretta Devine, Ruby Dee, Jerry Bednob, and Malika Shedawat, a huge Bollywood star who plays the Obama coordinator, also star, and that is what happens. We are the two that have the affair and fall in love, and the topic in this movie happens to be political parties, Republicans versus Democrats, very relevant to the 2011 election. So it's a romantic comedy, upscale, topical, trying to make you think, giving people food for thought, and setting the table for discussion as we move into the 2012 election.
And 2012 election is around the corner. And Brian, you also filmed Tyler Perry's Good Deeds, and that's expected out in 2012. What can you tell us about that project?
Oh man, that one's gonna be fire. There's drama, there's romance. People have seen Tyler's movies. They know what they could usually expect, and I think that this movie will shatter all expectations. It's his first leading man role. He plays Glenn Deeds. He's engaged to Gabrielle Union's character. I'm his younger brother, and we are real estate moguls. Felicia Rashad plays our mom. Our family has some internal strife and some conflicts. And as Tyler's getting ready to head to the altar, he meets Tandy Newton's character, who happens to be an employee for the company. And a whole lot of twists and turns happened. And it's I think it's going to be Tyler's best movie to date. He really put a lot into this one. So that's, February 24th, everywhere. Check it out.
Make sure you check it out, Good Deeds, in theaters, February 24th in 2012. And one thing, Brian, that I was truly impressed about you is your work with young people. First off, where did that passion come from, and why do you do it?
Thank you for the compliment, but I think it comes from being associated with athletics all my life. Every athlete is connected with a foundation, every pro athlete. You know, we're just talking to Jamal. I'm sure if you asked him right now, you know, what foundation you support, he'd have one off the top of his head. As I've gone through life, not everybody's like that. So it was very strange to see people that weren't philanthropically motivated or didn't care about giving back. I've never understood anything else. My father, my mother, Red Auerbach, all the people, you know, ML Carr, my Pop Warner coaches. You know, we had our jerseys on proudly, you know, doing community work, and that's what Pop Warner kids were supposed to do. So, you know, hats off to all of the Pee Wee leagues and little leagues and all sports that encourage and instill and plant those kind of seeds in kids, because that's how it grew in me. And the role models in my life, you know, my mom and my dad, Red Auerbach and ML Carr and their friend Seth Sanders, would always impress upon me the reasons why they admired or respected mom or dad. And it was for the same reasons, the type of people they were, character, integrity, philanthropic nature. And because I heard other people say that about dad and mom, it made me say, that has to be true, that has to be real, because it's not just, you know, they're not just blowing smoke at dad, they're saying it about both people. So I always coveted those things, and that's what made me want to be a Black Carpenter and then want to create and write my book and my youth empowerment guide, Black Carpenter.
And what would you say to the youth out here? I mean, today, Brian, we have a lot of kids out here who are doing the wrong things. How would you press upon a young man to do the right things?
I wrote a book. I've written directly to you from my perspective, you know, anecdotes and stories. Please go to my website, blackcarpenter.org, and understand a few things. You know, there is no such thing as luck. You know, I didn't get lucky. I've had a lot of bad breaks. A lot of bad stuff has happened. It's how you react and respond in those scenarios. That's not luck, and you can train yourself to respond better. It's called education. Everybody can get it. It's a choice. And right. The bottom line is life is all about the choices you make. You are the most important person in your life. You are empowered to make better choices. And if you're willing, I can help you make better choices. I can teach you. There's lots of people that can teach you. My first step is blackcarpenter.org. I've reached out to you. Reach on back. Click that website. Holler at your boy. You can reach me any day at actor Brian White on Twitter. Read my book. Write to me. I'll write back.
Everybody, holler at your boy Brian White. He's got a lot of great things going on right now, and he's doing some great things in the community, and he's helping young people. And that, to me, man, that's a beautiful thing, because we got a lot of kids out here that don't have daddies, and unfortunately, it's really, really hurting our society.
It takes a village to raise children. You know, I was raised by a community. I understand that, and I have great parents and a great family. So, you know, we're casting the net wide. I'm doing. We just shot a Koo's new campaign, which is T.I.'s clothing line. I know he's having his holdups right now, but we're working together to try to, you know, elevate the conversation and then reach out to young men and women and let them know we care, we're listening, you know, we go through things as well, but together we can all help each other do better. And so that's, you know, check out the new Aku campaign, stay tuned, you know, and again, reach out to me, actor Brian White on Twitter, and, you know, let's talk. Let's identify what the issues are and see if we can't make something better.
And Brian, real quickly now, who do you have in the Super Bowl?
I got to say, I love New England. So Philly's looking good, too. You know, but I got to say, I think New England can do it this year.
You don't have to say New England, Brian.
No, I do. No, I really do, because I believe it. You know, I wouldn't blow smoke. I mean, I've been all over cats like Ocho Cinco to get to New England since the end of last season, and seeing this team materialize and knowing what Bill is capable of and where the holes were last year, I see good things.
We'll see, Brian. And, again, full disclosure, again, I am a lifelong Philadelphia Eagles fan, and I have not forgiven the Patriots for what they did to my boys in the Super Bowl many years ago.
Well, you ain't gonna forgive them for what they're about to do this year either. But you know, it's all right. It's always next.
We shall see. We'll see.
True, true. Good luck,
Brian. Again, where can we find information about you and all the things that you're doing?
Sure, sure. Politics of Love is in theaters now. Go check it out. And actually, the easiest way for all of you to see it will be on video on demand, which means right in your living room through your local cable provider. So all those movies they list, you'll be able to see Politics of Love starting September 30th. They actually pushed the date back. All that information and more is on my personal website, brianwhiteonline.com. That's the hub to everything. It's always updated. If you want to know what's coming out, where I'll be, you know, whatever. If I'm hosting a party, it's all on there, brianwhiteonline.com. And, of course, Twitter, @actorBrianWhite. Follow me. Holla.
Brian, I followed you. Hopefully you'll follow back at GoForAgant. But, Brian, again, it was a pleasure talking to you, man, and we wish you nothing but the best of luck moving forward. And do great things, man. You're doing great things. Continue doing it, and let's do it again.
I appreciate the love, and I love you right back. Thank you so much for having me on.
Brian White, actor, he's doing some great things, man. He's got a lot of great things out there right now. And, again, the thing that impresses me the most about Brian White is his work in the community. He's doing some big-time things in the community, helping young people. And, again, you cannot discount that. I mean, there are a lot of young people out here. I know this is a sports show. We talk a lot of sports here. But the reality is there are a lot of young people out here who do not have a daddy. And, unfortunately, it is really, really doing a disservice to that child and doing a disservice to our society. It is affecting our society, people. It's time for people to step up. Men, women, everybody, it's time for all of us to step up and do the right things and try to be a daddy to your child, try to be a mother to your child, and try to be doing the right things. And, again, Brian White is one of those guys who's doing the right things. And, again, he has a message out there for you young people. He has a good message out there, a solid message, a message that you need to hear. Definitely, you need to hear that message. Brian White, nothing but a pleasure talking to him. And make sure you follow him on Twitter @actorBrianWhite. Follow this man on Twitter. Again, a lot of great things. He's doing a lot of great things in the community. Brian White, keep it up, man. Nothing but the best of luck to you moving forward. Nothing but the best of luck moving forward. And I want to move now to Jim Tressel. Jim Tressel was hired yesterday, actually, by the Indianapolis Colts. And Jim Tressel, his role will be replay review consultant. And he will be doing that for the Indianapolis Colts. That's his job, replay review consultant. And he will be a game day consultant, and he will help out Jim Caldwell and everybody else on the coaching staff to determine whether or not a play needs to be reviewed. And, you know, I mean, that's irrelevant to me right now. But what is relevant to me is this. Terrell Pryor, who was drafted by the Oakland Raiders in a supplemental draft a few weeks back, he will have to spend 5 weeks on a suspension list. He will be suspended for 5 games. So he's not playing until week number 6. But Jim Tressel gets hired by the Colts as a replay review consultant. He was involved in all that stuff, too. He was involved, too. Will Jim Tressel get a suspension for 5 games? It's only right. It's only right. I mean, do we continue to just hammer Terrell Pryor, but Jim Tressel just walks away like nothing happened? He throws the match at the gas and just walks away? Just walks away like nothing happens? Is that what it comes down to? I mean, if Terrell Pryor gets 5 games, Jim Tressel should get 5 games. Period. Terrell Pryor gets 5, Jim Tressel gets 5. And I don't even think Terrell Pryor should have got 5. But if we're going to throw 5-game suspensions around, we need to throw one Jim Tressel's way. It's only right. It's only fair. And the reality is, with the whole Terrell Pryor thing, that was the NFL trying to protect its free minor league system, which is college football. That's what that was about. But if we're talking fair, we're talking right, should be equal justice here. And equal justice would be a 5-game suspension for Jim Tressel. That's what it should be to me, a 5-game suspension. If Terrell Pryor's got to sit 5, Jim Tressel has to sit 5. Terrell Pryor sits 5, Tressel should sit 5. Bottom line. Hopefully it happens. Because this is crazy if it doesn't. This is absolutely crazy if it doesn't. This needs to happen. He needs to be suspended for 5 games, just like Terrell Pryor. It just needs to happen. It's not fair. It's just not fair. And Tressel does have a relationship with Jim Caldwell. They do have a relationship. They have known each other for years. But the bottom line is this. I said it before. I'll say it again. And I'll keep saying it. Terrell Pryor did not deserve to get suspended for 5 games. But he was. It is what it is. But by golly, Roger Goodell and the rest of the NFL brass needs to do what they have to do and do the right things. And the right thing, if you're going to suspend Terrell Pryor for 5 games, Jim Tressel needs 5 as well. Pryor gets 5, Tressel needs 5. And that's all I got to say about that. Because this is just not fair. It's ridiculous. Why does the kid have to suffer, but the adult in this whole situation does not have to suffer? Just my opinion, and hopefully it happens. Let's bring in now a man who is enjoying his vacation, our normal co-host, the one, the only, Jeremy Espy. Jeremy, how are you today?
I'm driving down to Ocean City, Maryland, and I got to say, it's the first thing I've heard you say in a while. Even the kids agreed with you. They were clapping.
It's interesting
that you say that. Go ahead.
It doesn't take a kid. Oh, let me interrupt you for a second. It does not take a kid to realize this. I mean, this is just it's a 2-year-old would know that this is the right thing to do. If Jim Tressel is going to come in and not get suspended, but Terrell Pryor gets 5 games, common sense would tell you something is a little wrong right there. Something is not right.
And they send the wrong message, and we talked about it, man. See, they're cheering for you, Paul. They were sending the absolute wrong message, and you're right. I mean, Terrell Pryor, he's just as guilty, as Jim Tressel. In fact, Jim Tressel is more guilty.
He's the adult.
No, he knew what was going on. The coaches of these organizations know everything that goes on. They know, if they're getting free tattoos, if they're getting free money, trips, cars, boats, women, it doesn't matter. I mean, men, it could be anything. We're not going to discriminate on that.
Let's just put it together. The money, the hose, and the clothes. Everybody knows what's going on when it comes to that.
And Tressel, I got to tell you, to me, of everyone, you lose a lot of respect for what a weasel is this guy walking in, and it's going to be a instant replay coordinator. I mean, it's almost as if this guy is like just trying to, you know, latch on and make a little bit of money, like he's got child support to pay.
I mean,
my question is, what is he really, if you're an NFL team, I mean, do you really think Jim Tressel, I mean, an instant replay, you know, consultant, I mean, is that really a job? Couldn't you have anybody doing that?
Well, it is an important job on some level if you think about it. I mean, a challenge does cost you a timeout, and those timeouts can be very valuable in the fourth quarter.
But this is a man, but the reason I say it, Paul, this is a man, so they're entrusting a man to know certain rules, yet he didn't know the rules of the NCAA, right?
Well, I mean, I'm sure that's a big rule book, but I mean, you know, sometimes you know what's going on, but sometimes people just put a blind eye to things, and, you know, they put a blind eye to things, and stuff happens, but I agree with you, man. I mean, this is some crazy stuff here to think that there's no way. If Terrell Pryor's got to sit five, Jim Tressel, you need to sit down five, too. Bottom line. And if you're not, this is crazy. And it's just crazy. It's just flat out, absolutely, positively crazy. Now, Jeremy, big news out of Philadelphia this week. And Michael Vick, 6-year, $100 million extension, 40, which is guaranteed. So he's back. This is a man who signed a $100 million contract a few years back with the Atlanta Falcons. So this man has signed two $100 million contracts in his career. Hopefully, if he can get through this contract, he can pay off all his creditors, which he still owes $19 million to. But, Jeremy, as a GM of the Philadelphia Eagles, would you have done this? Or would you have kept him on that franchise tag for another year to see exactly and make sure that you know that you know that you know that Michael Vick is the Michael Vick of 2011.
Well, Michael Vick is Michael Vick. First of all, Michael Vick was Michael Vick with the Falcons. He's a I think a little bit you could see his quarterback skills are a little better, but you look at what they did, and this was a smart move only because the price tag on Vick this year goes up exponentially next year if he has – he doesn't have to have the same year. He just has to have a on par year. When the transfer that is DeSean Jackson, who, I mean, DeSean Jackson would have to have a 1,500 receiving season for his market value to appreciate. If Vic goes out and plays the way he's capable, I mean, he would arguably, you would have a very serious argument. He'll get that, instead of it 6 years, $100 million, he'll get another 6 year, $130 million deal. So I think for the Eagles, it's an organization that is always cap savvy. They will certainly look to renegotiate DeSean Jackson later in the season. It's a no-brainer. At this point, I think you have seen they have blazed the trail to hard-line him. And I think this was part of DeSean Jackson's problem was, you know, and they said it. He held out. The Eagles do not negotiate with terrorists. So, you know, to punish him, to teach him a lesson, he'll wait for this season to go through, and then he'll get his payday.
You mean holdouts?
Well, terrorists, holdouts. I mean, he is under contract. You know, let's not forget when you sign a contract.
Well, let's not forget that this man has outplayed his contract. This man has outperformed his contract.
Let's not forget, you and I will go to the depths disagreeing. There is no such thing as outperforming
There is a such thing. You have outperformed your contract. You could definitely underperform your contract unless you would get cut or asked to take a salary reduction. So you can outperform your contract. If Michael Vick stinks up the joint these first two seasons, guess what's going to happen to Michael Vick? He won't see that $100 million or $100 million contract because he has underperformed. So when you overperform, you need to get paid as such. DeSean Jackson has overperformed his contract. He has outperformed his contract. There's no getting around that. DeSean Jackson has outperformed his contract, and we lost Jeremy there, and hopefully he can reconnect, and he has reconnected. But DeSean Jackson, Jeremy, has outperformed his contract, and if you don't believe that, then maybe you will get the You Stupid Award for this show.
Paul, but so you're saying that there is a higher scale than 100%. there is a higher scale. You're saying that when you give 100%, that you should give 80%. You should give 75%, because giving 100% means you've outperformed. I'm not saying that Deshaun Jackson isn't worthy of more money. What I'm saying, and I think any athlete that gets a renegotiated deal, kudos to them. But I think the holdouts, and I say the same for Chris Johnson. I mean, the bottom line is these guys signed a deal, and it gets back to the athlete being in the beginning of their career, being savvy enough to recognize getting these six-year deals or five-year deals is silly.
Yeah, but the thing is, Chris Johnson outperformed his contract as well, and as a running back, I don't begrudge any NFL player that holds out and says they want more money when they have outperformed their contract. You got to do what you got to do, because that window of getting paid is very small. It's a small window, and you got to do what you got to do to eat, because the reality is, once you get done with football, you might not be able to do anything else because you're so beat up. So when you have an opportunity to make the money, I never begrudge anybody for making the money, especially if Deshaun Jackson would have stunk to join up, he would have got released at some point. If Michael Vick thinks to join up, he will get released at some point.
You're
all around the league.
You see, all around the league, guys are getting released because
they won't take a pay cut.
As you always do, you're comparing two of your favorite foods, none of which taste good together. You're not.
You're talking about watermelon and bananas.
Pretty much. You know,
okay.
Or it doesn't. Watermelon and grapefruits. It's sad, because here you are. You're dogging correctly Jim Tressel, because Jim Tressel is not being held to the same standard that his counterpart is. Now look at this in terms of
Let me interrupt you for one second. Terrell Pryor is not his counterpart. Terrell Pryor was under Jim Tressel. Jim Tressel was Terrell Pryor's coach. He was the adult in the situation. But continue.
Well, I mean, they violate essentially the same you know, covenants of the NCAA rules, but in a contract in the NFL, when you sign it, number one, it says the NFL has the right to cut you know, at certain points. It doesn't say that the player has the right to hold out. In fact, it says the player has to fulfill the obligations of the contract. So it's no more wrong of Deshaun Jackson to hold out than it is of Jim Tressel to not be getting suspended. If you sign your name on the dotted line, then you got to perform. Otherwise, you're sending the wrong, just like you're saying, we're sending the wrong message out there that the athlete who does something wrong should be punished, but the coach shouldn't. You're saying to people out there who watch these games that it's somehow acceptable because you play 100% and you fulfill your obligation, you're deserving of more. What you're saying to the youth of America is basically it's a free for all. Life is essentially a free for all. Get as much. It's the wild, wild west. Get as much as you can get. Kill people. Maim people. It doesn't matter. If you think in your mind, who says he outperformed his contract? His contract didn't have performance clauses in it.
Deshaun Jackson should make $560,000 this year. That's what he should make.
Let me tell you something, Paul. The last time I checked, anybody who's making $565,000 to catch a ball, in my opinion, is they're well overpaid.
Oh, please. Don't. I want to go, and that's a perfect segue into Chris Johnson. He had some tweets out there basically talking about his job is different from the regular Joe Schmo's job. And he's right. I mean, I'm just paraphrasing the tweet, obviously. That's not the exact tweet. But he's right. His situation is totally different than any situation out there. I can't compare myself to Chris Johnson because I can't do what Chris Johnson does on the football field. If I could do it, I could compare myself to him. So, yes, I cannot compare myself to Chris Johnson. Chris Johnson deserved to get paid, and he has outperformed his contract as well. So when he writes those tweets, yes, that it may offend some people, but by golly, it is the truth. It is the exact 100% truth.
So Paul, the CEOs of these companies that were making hundreds of millions of dollars, and when the government stepped in and said that they weren't allowed to make that kind of money, is that appropriate?
Well, I mean, on one level, I mean, what is your point?
Paul, my point is, listen, Chris Johnson is right to say that, you know, his job isn't the average Joe. And certainly my example of saying that a man that catches a football, but the fact of what I say is true. To catch a football, you'll agree, Paul, there's no argument. To catch a football, $565,000, you take the job, right?
I couldn't, if I could catch the way Deshaun Jackson catches it and
no,
runs
I'm
the way
asking,
Deshaun
Paul,
Jackson.
I'm not asking. You got to
put it in context. You got to put it in context. Context
you know,
says
Paul,
to me,
Paul,
if,
you
if,
a team
if I can run the way Deshaun Jackson runs and catch the football the way Deshaun Jackson does, then yes, I deserve more than $560,000. If I can run the way Chris Johnson runs, yes, I deserve that new contract with $30 million in guarantees. Yes,
Paul,
I
deserve it. In a point in your career, you boasted you brought an intramural basketball team to the doorstep of a championship. When certain players were down, you've proven, give Paul Gant an opportunity, he's a shining star. So the Eagles come to you and say, we would assign you a three-year, say basically a $2.1 million deal. It's basically $1.7 million deal. It's like a 565 deal, three-year deal. And you go and you become a Pro Bowler each of the first 2 years. Certainly in the third year. Now, you're saying you have the right to hold out?
Yes. Yes. I deserve, you deserve, we all deserve fair
Deshaun
market
Jackson,
value.
Paul, coming out of college, Deshaun Jackson, and you know this, Deshaun Jackson, the book on him was clear. I mean, Deshaun Jackson had the upside, they said, was going to be, you know, huge. But there was a lot of doubters for Deshaun Jackson. The Eagles taking him, especially where they took him. I mean, this was not a no brainer. This was not a lock. This was not a guaranteed Hall of Famer by any means. I think sometimes there needs to be, and the same with Chris Johnson. I mean, there needs to be some level of recourse to say, hey, you know what? In the beginning of these contracts, though, these organizations, they took a risk on these players. Deshaun got a nice signing bonus, Paul.
You know what, Jeremy? I have to interrupt you now. We have a gentleman who was on the show in the past, and he's launching a blog talk show this Thursday. Let's bring him in. The one, the only, Mr. Brian Comfort. Brian, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing very well, Brian. And it gets started Thursday night, the Brian Comfort podcast. Tell us about it.
It was actually it was in the works for a while, and really just kind of getting the whole thing underway. It's kind of, I'm like Larry Fitzgerald. I don't like the business side of sports. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, like, it took a little while actually to get going, but now that it has, it suddenly happened real fast, and we've been doing just a lot of like promoting and stuff this week or this past week, and it's gonna be. You know, it's going to be your typical sports show with, like, kind of a slash in rap music and pop culture. You know, it's going to be, you know, like, it's going to kind of be like your show, to be honest with you. You know, I have my guests on. I already have some guests lined up. I'm sure enough going to ask you to come on.
Definitely.
But, yeah, the very first show will be Thursday at 7. The very first show will only run for 1 hour in the interest of the NFL season, starting Thursday night at 8. So the very first show, I have a guest coming on, and Thursday from 7 to 8, we are going to run down the over-unders for every team's win-loss from Vegas. And from there, we'll probably pick division winners and such, too, and just kind of talk NFL to get everybody ready for an hour before the NFL season starts. So a nice kind of easy way to ease into it for me because I've never hosted a show. I've been on plenty of radio shows but never hosted a show. So it's kind of nice. I'm going to get a nice just little one-hour, you know, inaugural show this Thursday before the NFL season starts. Then we'll get to watch the Packers and see.
And do we have any guests? You said you have some guests lined up. Any names out there you want to throw out there?
I can't throw any out just yet because everything's kind of still in the works. Mike Pizzetti,
okay.
He's going to be on my very first show Thursday going over-unders with me. But after that, I'm actually really close with Tracy Small. She works for Williams & Connolly in Washington, D.C., and she represents a lot of people within this industry.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of getting back and forth with her. Thaddeus Young is definitely going to be a guest on the show. interviewed him for a column a couple weeks ago, or a couple months ago, I'm sorry, in February, before a Cavs game. And, I've already discussed things with him on a personal level about the show, like, you know, not through agents and whatnot. But I can't really name any names other than them two just yet, just because I really don't know, to be 100% honest with you. So, you know, everything's kind of still in the works. I'm sure I'm going to have a few shows where it's just me kind of rambling on like I do on your show. So.
Right. And let's get a taste of Brian Comfort, the Carter Four, which is out, big album, Little Wayne. You said you're going to talk a little pop culture there. What can you tell us about the Carter Four?
I've talked to people like people that I like really respect their opinion on rap music, and they're like, yeah, it's okay, it's this, it's that for a studio album, because everybody loves this mixtape stuff. But I think it's fantastic CD top to bottom. I really do like the variety of songs. I think it's better than Carter 3 and on par with Carter 2. I thought Carter 2 was better than Carter 3. I know a lot of people, you know, beg to differ on that. Carter 3 had a lot of radio-friendly songs on it, and, you know, depending on which audience you're looking at, that's what people want to hear. I personally am more into more of like an underground style of hip-hop. And the Carter 4, I just think top to bottom track-wise has everything you could want, you know, as like in a complete rap album. I don't know the last rap album I could put in and play from beginning to end and really kind of get something out of every song. But this album I've been able to do that with, you know, just kind of pop it in when you're going on a drive and, you know, let it play from wherever, you know, it left off at and let it pick up wherever it left off at last time you were in the car. Very last song, outro with Nas, Bun B, Busta Rhymes, I think that song is just absolutely incredible as far as, you know, the features on it. Nas's verse on that track is absolutely incredible. Busta as well, kind of to outshadow Wayne on his own CD, actually, because the very last track, the very last verse is Busta Rhymes. Sorry to spoil it for you if you haven't heard it. And Busta Rhymes ends his verse with, thank you for coming to the Carter 4 or something. But his whole verse is nasty. I'm not a rapper, so I can't really relay it for you. But definitely an album worth buying. And, you know,
I was waiting for you to spit the verse.
I can't keep up with Busta Rhymes, man.
Okay. Fair enough.
I can't even try.
Fair enough. And Brian, this is out, you know, this comes out of nowhere, but Eddie Curry, I heard that he lost 100 pounds. Curry, the guy to me, has a lot of skills, has one of the better post games for a big man in the NBA, in my opinion. He's very smooth in the post if you really watch his game. Can Eddie Curry, if he's motivated, if he's in shape, can he help an NBA ball club?
That's
a lot of talking might be
if he shaved 100 pounds, I mean, kudos to him just for that. That's hard enough to do in itself. But you hit the nail on the head with the motivation factor. Is this guy motivated? I mean, maybe it's going to take what it took throughout his career and, all the down talk about him as his career was lackluster, for lack of a better term. Maybe this is what it took for him to get where he needs to be to make an impact on an NBA team. I honestly don't think it – I don't see it happening. I mean, now's the time to do it, though, going through a lockout. He's going to have a lot more time than he would just normally, trying to get himself in the mix with a team and going into camp and summer leagues and whatnot with the lockout. I mean, he has a lot of time to do this. So, this is the first I've heard of it. So, I mean, if maybe this is what it took for him to get motivated. And so, you said he's real skilled. I don't really think he is.
Okay. I knew that one year in New York where he put some decent numbers up. He had that decent year in New York where he was motivated and in shape, and even that last year in Chicago before he got that big contract. He had some decent numbers.
When he came out of high school, right?
Right.
Yeah, when he came out, you know, when he was first a pro, I thought for sure he was going to be a stud. And even when he had some down years, I thought, you know, maybe when he went to New York or, like you said, when he went to Chicago, I thought when he teamed up with Zach Randolph, I thought that was a bad idea just because of where they were both at in their careers. I mean, maybe now, especially with you saying that he – as far as I'm concerned, you're reporting this, Paul. So with you saying or reporting that he lost 100 pounds, I mean, maybe now that kind of handle would work.
It was reported by Rachel Nichols on ESPN. She was talking about the Melo's big game that he was having in Baltimore. And she said that Eddie Curry had shaved off 100 pounds. And I'm trying to figure out, I mean, if he shaved off 100 pounds, wouldn't he be a little underweight at that point? I mean, not unless he was close to...
I don't know, because he's, I mean, last I heard, he had a lot of weight put on. So if he would say 370, I don't mind my center, Eddie Curry's size, being 270. With the league the way it is now, it's not like he's going to be, you know, overpowering people like Shaq. So I think for his build, it might even be better for him to be a little more slim and athletic and have a little jump in them legs.
We're talking to Brian Comfort. Brian is about to unveil Brian Comfort podcast, which will air on blogtalkradio.com. So make sure you support that. And, Brian, last time we had a lockout many moons ago, back in 1999, we had a lot of guys who were never the same. Vin Baker, never the same. Drugs, alcohol. It was alcohol, not drugs. Vin Baker was never the same. Sean Kemp, never the same. Will we see that this time around if this lockout goes very long? Because I don't think I'm getting the sense after hearing some of the talk yesterday that this thing might get settled before the season. I'm just crossing my fingers here as I'm saying that.
But yeah, I hope so.
It seems like they're really committed to trying to get it done.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you had times where it felt like nobody was committed to getting it done, but now lately, the past week, 2 weeks, it's been kind of like everybody's, you know, got a fire under their butt trying to get this thing done. As far as players, like you mentioned Vin Baker and Sean Kemp coming, you know, like they did come out of the lockout. I don't really see it this time around because the majority of the star players in the NBA are younger now. They're not – I mean, I can't – you know, Kobe's kind of the older guy now. You know, he's not going to, like – I mean, that would be the last thing you'd expect, him to go on some kind of alcoholic binge or something. So, I mean, I don't think we'll ever see that in our lifetime. But, like, a lot of the younger guys now are, you know, the Durants, the Westbrooks, the Roses. You don't really have guys that are older, kind of – past their prime. I mean, there's always players like that in the NBA, but they're not really the stars today. The young guys are Amari or, you know, or Carmelo Anthony or, you know, like I said, Kevin Durant, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh. I mean, Russell Westbrook. List goes on and on. It's all younger guys, really. So you don't really have that real tier of, like, star players that are kind of fading off at this point in the NBA. Say, you know, Shaq retired, Iverson faded off real quick. It's kind of...
He's making a comeback.
Yeah, speaking of Iverson, the last lockout was the first year Iverson led the league in scoring. And another thing is that I want to know why Iverson isn't in any of these street ball games.
That's a great question. You would think
anybody
would be the guy. He would be the go-to. I would think he would be the go-to guy, but maybe he's in Atlanta somewhere, holed up, getting his mind right, getting his body right, getting all these things right. So he can make that return to the NBA.
Yeah, but, I mean,
again,
I'm crossing my fingers again. I know he got injured overseas last year, but like, we kind of never really knew the extent of that. Like, at first it was a career ender, and then it was, he's just kind of going to be done playing overseas and go rehab. It's not that bad. It's a high ankle sprain or something to that effect. I mean, we heard, like, everything about that. I want to know what it really is, and I kind of want to know what he's doing. If I'm Allen Iverson, these street ball games is my time to showcase my talent. That's what he did growing up. That's how he got in the NBA, really. I mean, you know, like, especially playing, he would get to play against some of the younger guys and some of the guys that maybe aren't stars, and he'd get to play with some of the stars. I mean, because we've seen James Harden in these things, you know, and then we've seen players as good as Kevin Durant in these things and, you know, Kobe Bryant. Carmelo Anthony, so he'd get a nice mix of guys where he wouldn't be the best player on the court probably, but he would be far from the worst too. So maybe a confidence boost, maybe, you know, I think Iverson should be organizing these things.
You would think. Him and Gary Moore need to get together and do some things.
You know, there's a lot of NBA players from Atlanta. They could throw one together in Atlanta. I think Lou Williams just did one in Atlanta where he dropped 51. And then Josh Smith from Atlanta. You know, they're – I mean, I don't know. That's just one question. The very first time I saw one of these things, my first thought was, this is perfect for Allen Iverson.
Definitely. Real quickly now, Brian, where can we go to tune in on Thursday at 7 o'clock?
Oh, man, you're putting me on the spot. I honestly don't have the link ready. I'm sorry. I wish I did. I will post it on my Twitter account. It's Twitter, twitter.com/@BryanConfer, C-O-N-F-E-R, B-R-Y-A-N-C-O-N-F-E-R. I don't have the link handy for me. I'm sorry. You kind of caught me off guard here on this Labor Day weekend. So
no problem,
I apologize.
Brian,
I
mean,
I wish I did have it to put up or to tell you, but I really don't know what it is, and I'm not going to try and
well, make
guess it or something.
Just make sure you go. Just make sure everybody you go to his Twitter account at Brian Confer, again, BryanConfer. Brian, it was a pleasure talking to you, sir. Good luck on your show. I will support it. I will support you and continue to do big things.
Thank you so much, Paul. I appreciate the time and you giving me this little window here to help promote the show. I appreciate it a lot. It means very much to me, and I'm looking forward to having you on.
Definitely. Take care, Brian.
All right. You too, Paul. Thank you.
All right. Again, Brian Confer, the Brian Confer podcast, it will be airing on blogtalkradio.com. We want to thank Jamal Anderson for stopping by. We also want to thank Brian White, actor, for stopping by. Appreciate his great knowledge and wisdom. We also want to thank Mike Bass, former Redskins star, for stopping by. And again, we also want to thank Brian Confer for stopping by. You can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgame, where you can listen to this show and other great shows. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at GoForAgain. For everybody here at GoFord, have a great Labor Day weekend. See you later. Bye.